You're listening to Radio Looks Loose, and I'm your host, Steve Matthews. Thanks for joining me for episode 106. And the title of this episode is Happy Insurrection Day. That's insurrection. We'll put that in some air quotes there for you. I thought the holidays were over. You know, we had Christmas, we had New Year's, and I thought, well, you know, that's pretty much it for holidays. But I forgot totally that January 6th is now, you know, it's kind of like a combination of 9/11 and Pearl Harbor and the Civil War and July 4th. I mean, it is like the most important holiday in the entire universe, apparently now. It's Insurrection Day. And so if you didn't know about that, well, I wish you all happy Insurrection Day. Of course, I'm being a bit silly about that. I don't think that there was any insurrection on January 6th of 2021. I think that they had a riot. I think they had a riot that got, let's say it had some encouragement from official sources. That's something that I've always held. I've held that since I saw it take place. I don't think that it looked right to me for a number of reasons. And there were a lot of people, even at the time when that took place. I remember the next day I was watching Ron Paul, Daniel McAdams, the Ron Paul Liberty Report. And both of them commented on that, too. You know, they were of the opinion that you were looking at some kind of a setup. And they weren't real sure about everything. But, of course, information has come out over the last about the so-called insurrection. In fact, I was just watching a video. It was on X. It was a Tucker Carlson video where he was interviewing a fellow. And let's see if I can find that here. It's episode 61. In fact, it was something that was just put out today, January the 6th. So if you follow Tucker Carlson on X, and you really should, he does have a good feed. He's got an interview out there with a member of Congress, and I can't tell his name from just looking at it here. I forget the gentleman's name, but he's a congressman from Louisiana. And it's a very interesting interview, and one of the things when you go through that interview, there's a place at one point where. This congressman, he's interviewing, the FBI director, and his name's escaping me, right? Christopher Wray. He's interviewing Christopher Wray in Congress. And he asked him, he says, can you tell me, you know, were there any, and I don't remember the exact question, but it was something to the effect of, were there any agents who were acting, who were posing as Trump supporters in the crowd? And Christopher Wray's comment was some kind of very evasive sort of thing. Well, you know, I can't talk about that in public, this kind of thing. And the congressman responded to him, kind of cut him off and said, the answer should be no. The answer should be no. And that was an outstanding comment by that congressman. That's exactly right. The answer should be no. It should be an unequivocal no. And if Christopher Wray has to hem and haw and dance around and say, well, you know, I can't reveal this and that, that tells you everything you need to know right there. Yeah, there were. You think of, there's another guy that was involved, and there were a number of tapes of this individual, videos, I should say, Ray Epps. And that's a name maybe if you follow the January 6th, committee and all the commentary and prosecutions or persecutions that have taken place over the past 3 years. There's this guy, Ray Epps, who is very clearly on tape and a video several times encouraging people to go into the Capitol, saying, hey, the Capitol's this way. There's one video of him, I think it was the night before, it was on January the 5th of 2021, and he's out. It's at night, it's outside, and he's got this big group of people around him. He's standing up and he's saying, tomorrow we need to go into the Capitol. And a lot of people in the crowd, and these are Trump supporters, these are people that had MAGA hats on, this kind of thing. And a lot of people were saying, you know, Fed, 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 Fed. You know, they were pointing at him and saying this. So there were a lot of people in Washington, D.C. for that demonstration, who were well aware that of possible setups, of possible I guess, what's the word? Entrapment. I think Vivek Ramaswamy has been going around this last week. I think he's been using the term entrapment. And I think that that's a good term to use. I think that certainly was what was going on. You know, these people were encouraged to engage in illegal or behavior, and then they were, and in some cases, they didn't do anything illegal, but they, you know, trumped up these charges against them and have thrown them in jail and substantially damaged or maybe ruined their lives because they were there in Washington, D.C. On the 6th. And they're still hunting people down, as far as I'm aware. So, yeah, that has been a very dangerous thing. And then, of course, Joe Biden goes out. It was just yesterday he gave this speech. It was about a half an hour long speech. And, you know, and Trump's an insurrectionist. And he implied he was a Nazi and on like this. And my opinion of this has always been that this was something that was done as a setup. You know, the Donald Trump had requested that they bring in some extra National Guard, some extra security for the rally. But that could only be done through the Speaker of the House, who was Nancy Pelosi at the time. And I think they also had to work with the mayor's office. And I know Nancy Pelosi declined the extra security. And I think the reason why is because there was a plot to create an event that they could then point to and say, you know, not only is Donald Trump dangerous, but also his supporters are dangerous, and we can go after them because they're insurrectionists, etc. And that's what they're doing. In a way, I have to almost congratulate the Democrats and the deep staters for what they did. It was actually a very brilliant sort of political judo move. You know, they, you know, in judo, what you do is you use your opponent's momentum and weight against him. And that's really what they did. You know, they used a lot of anger of people who were, in my opinion, justifiably upset, believing that the election had been rigged. I do believe it was rigged. And they drew them into Washington, and they created an event. They were able to create an event. And the and then use that not only to go after the people who were there, but also to intimidate those people who were not, you know, and to use this as a political platform. And then Joe Biden can get up and say, well, he's defending, you know, I'm defending our democracy. You know, I always, anytime you hear somebody use the turn of phrase, our democracy, I mean, you know that these people are establishment. You know that they are deep staters. I mean, you know that these are people who don't have your best interest at heart. And of course, they're all the Democrats that do this. And my dad pointed out to me as we talked, I mean, of course, yeah, they like to use the term our democracy because that goes with Democrat. They certainly wouldn't want to talk about our republic, which is actually what it is. This is a republic. I guess it would be too much to remind people too much of the Republicans. So they like to talk about our democracy, even though it's not a democracy. I mean, you think about the Pledge of Allegiance, right? You know, it's to the Republic for which it stands. You know, it's not to the democracy for which it stands. You pledge allegiance to the flag and to the Republic for which it stands, or as some people would say, the Republic of Richard Stands. Yeah, it's the Republic of Richard Stands. It's not the democracy of Richard Stands. And yeah, that's, so I mean, people, when they talk about our democracy, I mean, they're not really being straightforward with you. I mean, they're lying to you just in using that term, or at least maybe they're confused. Maybe we could say that. Maybe they're not necessarily lying, although some of them I think are. At the very least, I think there's some people that are very confused. This is not a democracy. It has never been a democracy, and we don't want it to be a democracy. Democracy is basically mob rule. That's what that is. We have a constitutional republic. And that's a very different thing from a democracy. So, yeah, so there was this, you know, Joe Biden gave this big, long speech it was in Valley Forge, no less. I thought that was interesting that he was at Valley Forge, you know, at a very patriotic venue. I've been there myself, Valley Forge. It's just outside of Philadelphia. And, of course, that's where George Washington and his army wintered. It was a very tough winter there. And going by memory here, I think it was the winter of 1777. And that that was a tough time for the American Revolution. Things did not look good. Things actually looked pretty bleak there. But they were able to soldier on and survive and go on to win the Revolutionary War, even though it would take a few years. But Joe Biden was using that particular venue as an opportunity to attack liberty, but he tries to posit himself as a champion of liberty. He's not a champion of liberty. It's a little bit difficult to sit and listen to somebody like Joe Biden go on and on, when at the same time he is deliberately and treasonously destroying our republic through mass illegal immigration. And flooding the country literally with millions upon millions of people, and that process shows no sign of letting up. And in fact, it's accelerating. It's not only is it getting better, it's accelerating. And we're going to talk some about that as well here this evening. At least, Lord willing, that's my plan. So anyway, happy Insurrection Day, so to speak. I guess one thing, I did look up, if you go on the White House website, you can find a copy of Biden's speech. It's a transcript of his speech. And let's see, he goes through here. Trump's claim that the 2020 election never could stand up in court. Trump lost 60 court cases, 60. Trump lost the Republican-controlled states. Trump lost before a Trump-appointed judge. There were... I'm not really, I think the courts really, really did not do their job during that fall. In fact, the Supreme Court really, I think, took a dive. They took a knee when they really needed to stand up, because that was there was a lawsuit that was brought by several states, and that lawsuit made a lot of sense. I mean, I'm not a constitutional attorney, but I could read through the case that they presented. I could look at the Constitution. And the states that did that, and I know that Texas was one of them, and there were a few other states that had joined together to bring a case to the Supreme Court. And their case was this. If you read the Constitution says that it's the state legislatures that are in charge of setting up the election process in each state. Well, there were a few states, and I believe Pennsylvania was one of them, where you had a judge, you had the courts take over and say, no, you have to do certain things in terms of your election process for the 2020 presidential election. I think some of those things involved mail-in ballots. I don't have all the references here in front of me, but the courts were involved. It wasn't the legislature, the Pennsylvania state legislature. It was the courts telling the legislature what they had to do. And these states said, well, this is a violation of the Constitution, and we're going to challenge the election process in these states. Well, they brought it to the Supreme Court, and I remember it was on a Friday evening. I remember the exact date, but I think it was sometime in December. It was on a Friday evening. The Supreme Court made an announcement. They're not going to review the case. They rejected to even hear it. And that was the end of the matter. And I really do think that was the best chance that patriots had to actually challenge the election results. And yet that was thrown out by the court. It was the John Roberts Supreme Court. And I think it's also interesting, too, that there was the legal challenge, and this is what the Trump people wanted. They wanted Mike Pence not to certify the election, but to kick it back to the states. And there are a lot of people saying, "Well, this was just ridiculous." Well, apparently, it had more merit than some people wanted you to believe, because I think that once Congress was seated in January of 2021, they actually made some legal changes to make sure that nobody could do that in the future. So apparently that was a legal pathway that some people thought was open to to Donald Trump, but they tended to poo-poo it. However, I did recall seeing something. I think it was a video where they were talking to Can't think of the guy's name right now. He was a CNN commentator. He's a lawyer. Van Jones. That's who it is. Van Jones. Van Jones was actually saying, it was an interview with Van Jones. He's a big Democrat, certainly no fan of Donald Trump. But he was even essentially admitting that was a legal route, you know, that that Mike Pence could have refused to certify the election and sent it back to the states. Now, that's, of course, that's not what happened. And I think it's interesting, too, and this is one of the things that's worth mentioning, is that in the congressional testimony that was supposed to take place on January 6, 2021, there were some congressmen, I think Ted Cruz was one of them, and I think there were some others, who were supposed to read into the congressional record some of their objections to the way the election was conducted. But that never took place because the, quote, insurrection happened. And when the insurrection happened, well, you know, everybody, you know, went into hiding. And then when they came back in the evening, everybody was so exhausted and shaken up that they just said, oh, well, we're just going to vote to certify the election and go home. So I think that's interesting, too, that the so-called insurrection prevented some of the testimony being read into the congressional record. And the thing is, this whole myth of an insurrection, I mean, it's propagated everywhere. I mean, there was an article in my local paper, the Cincinnati Enquirer, that was calling it an insurrection. I mean, they're just using that language. And of course, there was nobody had a gun. There were no armed people up there trying to take over the government or anything like that. I think that there were people who got out of hand. There are certainly, I think, people that committed some committed acts of vandalism, some committed acts of violence. I certainly don't condone that sort of thing. There are some people that did some things that were foolish, maybe even dangerous, and things that were illegal. And for those people that did those things, you know, I mean, I think they should be appropriately charged. But from what I can tell, the vast majority of the people that have been arrested and prosecuted and thrown in jail, and many of them are being held as political prisoners in, you know, essentially it's the DC version of Gitmo, that most of those people were guilty of nothing but showing up. There was a guy, in fact, he was associated with Alex Jones, Owen Schroyer. They had video of him. He never went into Capitol. In fact, he was going around outside of the Capitol telling people, don't go into the Capitol. Don't go into the Capitol. And he ended up still getting tossed in jail. And I think he spent about a month, I want to say, in solitary confinement. He committed no illegal acts. He did nothing that was, I think, in any reasonable person could say was illegal. He did not stir up violence. He himself did not act violently. In fact, he encouraged people not to go into the Capitol. And he ended up still getting tossed in the clink. And, of course, Ray Epps, you know, the guy who actually has been captured on video, urging people to go into the Capitol and to apparently to engage in riotous types of acts, nobody went after him. And in fact, you know, the Democrats during that whole time that they had the J6 committee, the little kangaroo court, you know, the Democrats didn't even want to discuss Ray Epps. They didn't want to bring him up. And so, I mean, you know, and he was the guy more than anybody else who was doing his best, his level best, to stir up a riot. And it's very interesting that nobody was interested in going after him, but they did throw in jail a guy who was telling people not to go into the Capitol. You know, I remember when I was a kid, this goes back to the 1970s, there was a famous case where there was that automaker, John DeLorean. Of course, you know, the famous DeLorean cars, you know, like in Back to the Future, you know, Marty's got the DeLorean with the flux capacitor in it. Well, this, you know, John DeLorean was, I think he had been a former Chrysler executive, and he founded his own car company, named after himself. And they put out these DeLoreans, and, he got into some legal trouble. I think he was, either something having to do with drugs, maybe it was cocaine or something like this. And he was convicted, and his conviction was overturned finally because they said he was entrapped. You know, in other words, that these officers, I don't know if they may have even been FBI. I'm going by memory here, so you know, I could be wrong about some of the particulars, but they apparently entrapped him. They enticed him into doing these illegal acts, and his conviction was in fact overturned. And it certainly seems to me that that was what was going on January 6th. I mean, you had these officers waving people into the Capitol, flinging open the doors, you know, come on, y'all come on in. And you know, you see these pictures of these people, these supposed insurrectionists, and they're even walking through the rotunda, you know, in this aisle, this rope aisle, you know, how they have the rope set up and it just kind of guides people through the rotunda. They weren't just walking around. A lot of them, they were actually going through this rope aisle set up. I mean, these are not people there to do violence. Yeah. And those people did nothing wrong. You know, you might say they were unwise for doing that. I think they got sucked in to an operation. It was unwise, but I don't think they did anything illegal. And it's really disturbing to see the way that our government framed and continues to frame a lot of patriotic Americans for supposed insurrection when there was none. So anyway, that's about all I have to say there about Insurrection Day. I guess some other items in the news this week. It's been interesting. You probably heard the president of Harvard step down, Claudine Gray. And there were a lot of people that have been cheering this on, and there are a lot of people, conservatives, who have said, wow, this is a great victory against diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, DEI or DIE, as I prefer to call it. I like to call it diversity, inclusion, and equity. And that spells DIE. And that's actually really I think that's the message behind it all. They just want you to go die, you know, at least if you're not one of the preferred groups of the people that push DIE. But yeah, so you know, there's a lot of people out there kind of saying, oh, you know, they got rid of this person, you know, and you know, she's a kind of a DIE queen, and it's good that they got rid of her. But I'm not so sure that it's the victory that for free speech or equity, real equity. I don't mean the kind of equity that the DIE people say, but for free speech or for fairness, equal treatment before the law, these kinds of things. No, I don't think that it is. I don't think, first of all, you know, the reason is that's put forward why she was let go is because of many charges of plagiarism. So, you know, you're president of Harvard and you're being charged. And I didn't follow it super closely, but, you know, there were a lot of charges and apparently they were credible charges. And of course, it's kind of hard to be president of any university, let alone a university as prestigious as Harvard University, and be a plagiarist. I mean, at least in the world of academia, there's no more serious sin than plagiarism. Of course, plagiarism is simply where you misrepresent, you know, you represent the work of others as your own. You're stealing their stuff. You know, you're going and saying, oh, you know, you write these passages and yeah, you've copied them from people, but you don't give credit. Now, you know, probably all of us at the very least, you know, have written papers when we were in high school, right? And you're supposed to give citations. You know, they've got these programs now, I understand. Of course, you know, with AI and all of this stuff, you know, students like to try to cheat. And I understand professors have programs, in fact, that they will put these papers through that students have written, and they're plagiarism filters. And apparently they can pick out stuff that has been put into a student paper, but not properly cited. And So, I mean, you know, that's a big deal. I mean, as a student, you can't do it. So, I mean, if you're a student and you can't plagiarize, I mean, it's kind of hard to have a president of a university who's also plagiarizing. My guess is that probably her plagiarism was probably known long before she ever became Harvard president. That would be my supposition. I think that probably was known. But she was an affirmative action hire. She was a black woman. And they brought her on because she was a black woman. I think that's also pretty evident. And yet, you know, and of course, it's been represented to the public as, oh, well, she was fired because of plagiarism. Well, I don't think that was the case. I think that is a misrepresentation. As I said, I very strongly suspect that those that plagiarism was known prior to her even being hired, which I believe was just last year. I think it's been less than a year that she's been in that position, if memory serves correctly. But no, that wasn't the reason that they went after her. The reason that they went after her was because she was, in the eyes of the Israel lobby, in the eyes of the Jewish lobby, she was insufficiently pro-Israel. And, you know, she actually got fired, not because of anything she did wrong, but actually because of some statements that she made that I thought were pretty reasonable. And, you know, there is this lobby, you know, the Israel lobby out there. There are a lot of very powerful Jewish donors to Harvard who didn't like the idea that someone could protest Israel on campus. Well, you know, here's the thing, you know, you may not like what somebody says, but unless they are explicitly saying things that are immediately threatening, you know, saying, hey, go grab that guy and kill him or something like this, advocating for insurrection, hey, let's go overthrow the government, you know, this kind of thing. Unless somebody's doing something like that, they have a right to speak. They have a right to say those things. You know, they have a right to say, you know, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. You know, these were the protesters against Israel. They have a right to say that. Now, you know, they're Israel backers. Jewish students may not like when people say things like that, but not liking what somebody says doesn't mean they don't have a right to say it. Now, of course, you can come back and you can say, well, yeah, but Harvard's a private institution and, you know, Harvard can govern speech as they want. Well, that's true. But, you know, what Claudine Gray said essentially was, you know, that these students, you know, they had a right to speech within, you know, what Harvard as an institution deemed was legitimate. And I think that especially when you're dealing with the university, that really using as a guide the First Amendment, I think, is a pretty good idea. Now, you know, you might say there are things that can cross the line in a private institution. And a private institution does have a right to say, okay, you know, you can't say these kinds of things. But what I think is interesting is that, you know, those people who oppose the Palestine, you know, those who are demonstrating for Palestine and against Israel, they called these three university presidents in before Congress. So essentially, they kind of made it a quasi-First Amendment issue by hauling people in front of Congress to testify. This is one of the things about the Israel lobby, and they have done this consistently for years now, and that is that they attack the First Amendment. These are sometimes they're individuals who do this. Sometimes they do it as part of institutions, such as the ADL. But they are very hostile to the First Amendment. Ron DeSantis, for example, Ron DeSantis actually flew to Israel last year and signed a bill that essentially attacked the First Amendment rights of Floridians. You know, and he was standing there and he was surrounded by a number of, Israeli officials, and he's signing this bill and it went into effect in the state of Florida. Well, I lost a good deal of respect for Ron DeSantis when he did that. You know, there is, you know, the First Amendment does not exist so we can talk about the weather. The First Amendment exists so we can discuss ideas, and maybe ideas that not everybody likes. Maybe the ideas that are controversial. Here's a comment from someone, and I almost hesitate to read this a little bit because of the individual it comes from. Not because I think that he's not a competent writer and thinker in many respects. His morals are not particularly good, and I don't want to be endorsing him. His name's Glenn Greenwald. He's a lefty in a lot of ways. He's a leftist. He's a liberal, but he actually does have some very good things to say about the First Amendment. And I'm just going to read you a little bit of an article that he has out that I think is actually pretty much spot on. And this is what he said, quote, he's talking about Claudine Gay. Gay's resignation yesterday came after conservative journalist and activist proved persuasively that Gay had committed serious plagiarism. But one has to be extremely naive to believe that that was the reason Gay was forced to resign. And even more naive to believe that this concern about integrity in academic writing was what motivated the campaign against her. Indeed, McGill, the Penn president, was forced out by the very same faction, despite no plagiarism allegations of any kind. Now, the leader of this campaign, the real leader, the billionaire hedge fund manager and fanatical Israel supporter Bill Ackman, is already targeting Kornbluth. Kornbluth is the president of MIT, who, like McGill at Penn, also does not have a plagiarism scandal, but she does have an Israel and anti-Semitism scandal, end quote. So I think that's a very good point that Glenn Greenwald made, that you've got Bill Ackman, this billionaire hedge fund manager that forced out Claudine Gay, supposedly because of plagiarism, but he's also going after forced out the president of Penn, this McGill, and is also going after the president of MIT, an individual named Kornbluth, neither of whom have plagiarism scandals. So I mean, that's, you know, the idea that Claudine Gay was forced out because of plagiarism, I think, is silly and naive. That's not the reason she was forced out. Bill Ackman is a guy that, in some ways, you know, he made a statement a couple years ago I thought was actually pretty good. You may recall the uproar going on with, Kyle Rittenhouse. Remember Kyle Rittenhouse, who he killed a couple of individuals who were trying to attack him in that riot up there in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And he also injured somebody else. And he was put on trial. I guess he was charged. I believe he was charged with murder. And anyway, he was acquitted. He was found innocent of that. And I remember Bill Ackman even said that he and his wife, you know, after reviewing the videos, they looked at it and they thought, you know, this young man is innocent. And so Bill Ackman, I mean, he has been, I think, fair-minded. I mean, I assume he's a big Democrat and a liberal, but he was fair-minded about that. And I thought, well, good for him. I was pleased to see that. But I think that he has really been over the top in this whole issue of student demonstrations at Harvard and at other universities. They have really gone hard after he and some of his associates have really gone hard after some of these students. They've doxed the students. They've threatened to put their names out publicly. You're never going to work again. You know, this kind of thing. I mean, really very kind of thuggish. Behavior, much like a mafia, for these opinions of the students. And I'm not even at this point even trying. I haven't even discussed the ideas that were being expressed by the students, because I don't really think that's what's in view here. The students did not do anything that was in violation of the Second Amendment or First Amendment, excuse me, in violation of the First Amendment. You may not like what they said, but they do have a right to say that. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I see things, hear things all the time that offend me, that I don't like to hear. But I don't say to someone, oh, well, you said something about Christianity or about Christians or about, You know, think of all the abuse that gets dumped on the heads of white people. I mean, these DEI people, these DIE people, these diversity, inclusion, and equity people. I mean, they can go out and call you every name in the book and just say horrible things about you. And not only does nobody object to it, I mean, they actually sit back and, you know, they're applauded. You know, it's good job. You know, in fact, I think sometimes it's a contest. See who can denounce ordinary white Americans the most. You know, and it's really an astounding thing to me to see some of that stuff. But I don't think anybody should be thrown in jail over it. I don't think anybody should be doxxed over it. I don't like it. I disagree with the things that they say, but it doesn't strike me as that I have some need to go out and to persecute people with whom I have disagreements. We'll argue with them. I'll push back on it as opportunity presents itself, but I don't think I don't think I have a right to go and try to force somebody to lose their job, to lose his job over something like that. But these people like Bill Ackman and others in his of his mindset, they do believe that, and I think that is a real threat to our republic, not our democracy, but our republic. This is a problem. Let's see what else. Oh, one other thing I did want to talk about here today, too. I don't want to go on too long. It's getting a little bit late, and I'm over half an hour already. But there's a very interesting, let me see if I can find that here. There's a tweet that was put out by, Scott Adams. You may know Scott Adams. He is... he's the guy. He used to comic strip Dilbert. You know, maybe you're familiar with Dilbert, but he put out I keep wanting to call him a tweet. It's not a tweet. It's a post. They do posts on X now. That still just drives me nuts. I think Elon Musk has done some good things with Twitter. I don't like the rebranding as X. I never have. I guess maybe one of these days I'm going to get used to it, but I still fight against it. I still want to call it Twitter. It's X. I know. And you don't tweet on X, you post on X. I finally figured that out as well. But there was a post that Scott Adams put out. In fact, it was yesterday. It was January the 5th. And it was a short post. I'll just read it to you here. This is what Scott Adams said. Quote, "There is no way an American is in charge of our immigration policies. It's now 100% obvious the goal is destruction. Whatever is going on here is not coming from inside the house. That needs to be the working assumption." End quote. Well, Scott Adams is exactly right. He's exactly 100% right. There's not an American in charge of our immigration policy. That American is not Joe Biden. That American is not Alejandro Mayorkas or any of the other deplorables that Biden has surrounded himself with in our government. That's not ultimately who's in charge of this. This is the Vatican's immigration policy. And this is the thing that I think almost nobody seems to recognize. This is something that's coming from the papal antichrist. You know, that's what you got going here. You know, and this is something I've written about extensively over the past number of years. I've given a couple of talks on it. I gave a talk on it in 2022, called "Your Land, Strangers Devoured in Your Presence." I gave that for the Trinity Foundation on Reformation Day in 2022. This past fall in 2023, I gave another talk on that. It was called "Antichrist Illegal Alien Assault on America." And I detailed in there in both talks some of the evidence against Rome. And I just barely even scratched the surface. Lord willing, here in 2024 at Reformation Day, I would like to give another talk. We'll see if Tom Giudaitis lets me do that. Lord willing, I'd like to do another talk, and it's going to be an analysis of another a Roman Catholic document. It's called "Strangers No Longer Together on a Journey of Hope." But I mean, Rome has a very well-developed immigration program. That immigration program, that immigration theory is designed to break down, destabilize independent nations and usher in world government. I mean, and Rome has been very open about world government. I mean, I think it's just amazing to me how an organization like Rome can be so open about its desire for world government, and yet so many of these people that claim their alternate, alternate media, you know, the so-called alt media. Almost nobody ever talks and points out the fact that Rome says, yeah, you know, world government, we love it. We're down with world government. We think world government's totally awesome. That's what Antichrist says. He thinks that world government is awesome. And he can't wait to see it come about. And he does everything in his power. I'm talking here about when I talk about Antichrist specifically, I'm talking about the office of the papacy. I don't mean just an individual pope. I mean the whole line of popes going all the way back. That's the position of that's the Protestant school of prophetic interpretation, also known as historicism. That was also the official position of the Presbyterian Church in the Westminster Confession for over 250 years, until they changed that with the 1903 edition of the Westminster Confession of Faith, and they removed the language about the Pope being Antichrist, man of sin, and son of perdition. That was a huge mistake. And I think it's interesting that almost nothing good has happened in Presbyterianism, at least American Presbyterianism, since they did that. And that was 120, 121 years ago when they made that change. And it's been downhill ever since. You know, do I think that there's a relationship between those things? Yes, I do. I do indeed. But yeah, I mean, the Vatican has been very open about using immigration to flood nations with illegal aliens and refugees and even legal immigrants. But I mean, it's the, you know, what's that saying? There's a 500-pound gorilla in the room. You know, it's this 500-pound gorilla in the room that nobody wants to talk about. I mean, you can go on websites that are, again, alternate kinds of websites. You know, they're not mainstream corporate news websites, and websites that specialize in immigration issues, and they still will not talk about the role that the Roman Catholic Church plays in the immigration disaster that's taking place. I mean, this is all being done under a Roman Catholic president. Joe Biden, he's not just a Roman Catholic president, but he's also a president that has very close Jesuit ties as well. He goes to a Jesuit parish in Washington, D.C. I think it's what, Holy Trinity or Trinity? I think it is. That's a Jesuit-run parish. Interestingly enough, Nancy Pelosi also has very close Jesuit ties. And this may also surprise you too. This is something that, it came up in the local paper here just this past week. It's not just Democrats who have Jesuit ties. Vivek Ramaswamy, who's kind of become a darling of a lot of conservatives, I mean, and gotten a lot of support. He went to Jesuit high school right here in Cincinnati. He went to a very well-known school in the area called St. Xavier High School. That is a Jesuit-run school. And not only did he graduate high school there, he currently sits on the board of directors of St. Xavier High School. And the reason this was actually in the paper over the past last week was because apparently there was a move by some people. They wanted to kick him off the board, and the Xavier High School people said no, we're gonna keep him on the board. Now, let me see if I can find. I wanted to sh- I got so busy trying to get some things done here this evening. I didn't cue that up. But let me see. Maybe I can find that here. Let's take a look. Because it was actually a very interesting story. And like I say, it was right here in the local paper. All right, so let's see. Getting a little bit warmer here. Yeah, I've got so many news clippings that it's kind of overwhelming sometimes. I use this clipper, this web clipper. It's called Evernote. I think I'd be completely, totally lost without it. I'm sure that I couldn't do this show without it. I know that. But yeah, here's the article that I found. Here's a headline. This is from Cincinnati Enquirer. This is dated January the 4th, 2024. And it says, Chair, St. Xavier High School won't remove Vivek Ramaswamy from Board of Trustees. And it starts off here, quote, a Jesuit-run private high school in the Cincinnati region won't remove Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy from its board of trustees, the board's chairman said Wednesday. Ramaswamy's controversial comments on the campaign trail have prompted some St. Xavier High School alumni to call for the school to oust Ramaswamy from its 25-member board of trustees. And here's a statement. Here, this is a quote within the article, quote, the board acknowledges the sincerity and honest intentions of those urging Mr. Ramaswamy's removal from our board of trustees, end quote. St. Xavier High School Board of Trustees Chairman Nick Ver said in a statement sent to the Enquirer on Wednesday afternoon. Well, Nick Ver, now that's an interesting name too. Now, if you're not from Cincinnati, you probably don't know him, but he had been, I want to say at one time he was a Cincinnati city councilman, and he's kind of been active in a lot of local issues over a number of years. I think he's probably about my age. He's probably in his 50s. So he's kind of a prominent local guy. I didn't know that he was on the Xavier board of directors. I guess he probably went to Xavier too. Nick Ver continues, quote, however, we have concluded that any action we initiate beyond having already agreed to his sabbatical could be interpreted as participating in or intervening in a political campaign. Therefore, we will not and have no plans to take any action regarding Mr. Ramaswamy's status as a member of the Board of Trustees on sabbatical. So I guess apparently he's on sabbatical currently. It says Ramaswamy graduated from St. Xavier in 2003 as valedictorian. While he remains listed as a member of the St. Xavier High School Board of Trustees, Ramaswamy has been on sabbatical from the board and has not participated in any board activities since launching his campaign, according to Ver, a 1977 St. Xavier graduate. So, that's interesting, and I think that's important to keep in mind. So, I mean, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy, he has significant Jesuit connections. And I know a lot of people like Vivek Ramaswamy. I mean, he's very smart. He's very well-spoken. You know, he says a lot of things that a lot of, say, conservative, patriotic Americans agree with. And I agree with it. I mean, you know, I've heard him say a number of things. Like, yeah, that's a pretty good point. That's well said. I mean, just this last week, he was out there talking about January the 6th being a case of entrapment. And I think he's right about that. But I have to admit, I don't trust him. You know, it's hard not to see that and see, okay, is this a guy that's being put forward by the Jesuits as a sort of wolf in sheep's clothing? Is that the right thing to say in this particular case? Maybe I think it is. But anyway, that concerns me. And I don't think a lot of people know that. So that's why I wanted to at least mention that. Well, I guess I've gone on probably long enough here today. So I wanted to say, maybe that's a good opportunity to wrap things up. Thank you very much for listening. It's great to be here again this evening, and I hope you got something out of this podcast. As I said, Lord willing, I really hope that I have an opportunity to come back and do this more regularly here this year, especially this being an election year. I think it's really important to be consistent. I know I wasn't as consistent as I wanted to be last year just because I had some other things going on. I had the certification I was working on at work, and that was kind of that sucked up a lot of time, but I'm not doing anything like that right now, so I've got a little bit more time, and Lord willing, I hope to be able to do more in the way of podcasting. So, Lord willing, I'll see you again next week. Thanks so much for listening. And until that time, may the Spirit of Truth guide you in all truth as you read and study God's Word.